Your program feature will begin in just a moment. First, a reminder, we have a Bible Institute here at BBN. At bbnradio.org, just click Bible Institute.
Hey, how's that home building project going? Let BBN help you as you build a strong family to the glory of God. Welcome to Building Blocks for the Family. Our guest is Gary Chapman. Parenthood has its frustrations, its challenges, but also its rewards. In the midst of all that, what should be our basic objectives in raising our children? Here's Gary Chapman. Three goals for parents.
Life has to do with mothers and fathers and children. Anybody here have a mother and father? That's what I thought. That's what the Bible's all about. Mothers and fathers and children. People. You know, this thing of parenting can be hazardous to your health, physically and emotionally. Some of you remember I mentioned a t-shirt I saw down at the Crown Drugstore that said, "Motherhood is filled with challenges and frustrations." And at the bottom it said, "But eventually they move out." You know, we as parents are charged with raising our children, communicating to our children certain truths about life. But sometimes what we think we communicate is not what comes through. Now, Acts chapter 25 is not a passage on parenting. It is a passage on Paul. He is still a hostage. He is still in Caesarea. He has been in prison for 2 years. Actually, the events of chapter 25 are very, very similar to the events of chapter 24. The only change, really, is the characters. Last week, you may remember, Felix and his wife Drusilla were the main characters, and it was before those two that Paul defended himself against the charges of the Jews. But Felix has now gone back to Rome, and in chapter 25 he has been replaced by Festus. Don't you just love those names? Felix and Festus. If you ever have twins, you might consider that. Festus, he's the new Roman governor that comes in, and in the chapter 25 we're also introduced to King Agrippa and his wife Bernice. Now, Paul's behavior in this chapter illustrates the three character traits needed by all young people, all children, and all adults. And these three traits are best learned in childhood, and they are best taught by parents. So I state them tonight as three goals for parents. Three things that we are trying to teach our children. I believe they're crucial. I believe every child needs them. I believe every adult needs them. And so I want to share them. Number one, we seek to teach our children to respect civil authority. To respect civil authority. Verses 1 through 12. Will you listen to the events? 3 days after arriving in the province, that is the province where Caesarea was located, Festus went up from Caesarea to Jerusalem, where the chief priest and the Jewish leaders appeared before him and presented the charges against Paul. Here we go again. They urgently requested Festus, as a favor to them, to have Paul transferred to Jerusalem, for they were preparing to ambush to kill him along the way. Luke adds that little bit of information. Festus answered, "Paul is being held at Caesarea. I myself am going there soon. Let some of your leaders come with me and press charges against the man there if he has done anything wrong." After spending 8 or 10 days with them, he went down to Caesarea, and the next day he convened the court and ordered that Paul be brought before him. When Paul appeared, the Jews who had come down from Jerusalem stood around him, bringing many serious charges against him, which they could not prove. Then Paul made his defense. "I have done nothing wrong against the law of the Jews or against the temple or against Caesar." Festus, wishing to do the Jews a favor, said to Paul, "Are you willing to go to Jerusalem and stand trial before me there on these charges?" Paul answered, "I am now standing before Caesar's court where I ought to be tried. I have not done any wrong to the Jews, as you yourself know very well. If, however, I am guilty of doing anything deserving death, I do not refuse to die. But if the charges brought against me by these Jews are not true, no one has the right to hand me over to them. I appeal to Caesar." After Festus had conferred with his council, he declared, "You have appealed to Caesar. To Caesar you will go." Respect for civil authority. One of the most basic principles of human society is to respect civil authority. I'm talking about respecting the laws of the land. I'm talking about respecting those who enforce the laws of the land. A respect for authority. Here is Paul, a Roman citizen, already held hostage for 2 years, and now another civil officer arrives, a new one, and Paul has to deal with Festus. It was the knowledge of civil law that led Festus in the first place to refuse to send Paul to Jerusalem. You will note, when he went to Jerusalem, the Jews said, "Bring him here that we may try him here." But Festus knew civil law. He was a Roman. He was a Roman official. And he knew that Roman law required that a man or a woman charged with anything have a fair trial. And so he knew the background of this story. He had a letter from his predecessor. He knew the facts of the story, and he knew that Paul would not get a fair trial in Jerusalem, and so it was his respect for civil law that said, "No, if you have anything against this man, you go with me to Caesarea, and there you press your charges." Now, he's pretty good on the first round. But in verse 9, Festus wavers on his loyalty to civil authority. For verse 9 says, Festus, wishing to do the Jews a favor, wishing to do the political thing that would make him get him the favor of the Jews, he said to Paul, "Are you willing to go to Jerusalem and stand trial before me there on these charges?" You see, here's an officer who is wavering on what he knows to be right, willing to bend the law a little bit to help himself in his position. We are always in trouble in any society when the civil officers of that society feel that they are not responsible for living by the law which they enforce. And that is a part of our problem in our society, that we have a significant number of civil authorities who think that they are not required to live by the law which they enforce. And any society is in trouble when that happens. But Paul does not waver on his commitment to civil authority. He knew civil law. Verse 10 indicates that. He was a Roman citizen. He knew his rights as a Roman citizen. He knew that he should be tried in a Roman court. You see, if you respect civil authority, first of all, you will know what the laws of the land are. You will learn what is and what is lawful and what is not lawful in a society. And Paul knew that. And when Paul appealed to Caesar, he is indicating very strongly that he believes in civil law, and he is committed to the principle of civil law. Now, does that mean that the law is always right? No. Caesar, to whom he appealed, was Nero. Nero was not a Christian by any stretch of the imagination. But Paul believed in the concept of civil law. He happened to be a Roman. He happened to be living under Roman law. And he based his life, he based his appeal on Roman law. Now let me read for you one paragraph in Romans chapter 13 that every one of you, if you have not underlined this or put brackets around it or written it in the back of your Bible, you ought to write it, because here is something that every young person, every adult needs to be clear on. The Bible teaches that we are to be committed to civil authority and live under that authority. Now listen to the first 7 verses of Romans 13, written by Paul, the man at whom we're looking tonight. "Everyone must submit himself to the governing authorities, for there is no authority except that which God has established. The authorities that exist have been established by God. Consequently, he who rebels against the authority is rebelling against what God has instituted, and those who do so will bring judgment on themselves. For rulers hold no terror for those who do right, but for those who do wrong. Do you want to be free from fear of the one in authority? Then do what is right, and he will commend you. For he is God's servant to do good, to do you good. But if you do wrong, be afraid, for he does not bear the sword for nothing. He is God's servant, an agent of wrath to bring punishment to the wrongdoer. Therefore, it is necessary to submit to the authorities, not only because of possible punishment, but also because of conscience. And that is to have a clear conscience. This is also why you pay taxes. For the authorities are God's servants who give their full time to governing. Give everyone what you owe him. If you owe taxes, pay taxes. If revenue, then revenue. If respect, then respect. If honor, then honor. Now, folks, you can't make it much plainer than that. Human government was instituted by God. And even an imperfect government is better than no government. Imperfect laws are better than no laws. And when we are unjust, then we are going to be judged by the laws of the land. Now, we know that there are many societies, many governments that are not Christian. Atheistic communism that dominated 70 years in Russia is an example of that. But can we not see more clearly than our predecessors that unjust government will eventually be thrown down by the living God? Now, that doesn't mean we are not to seek to right wrongs in our government. We are. And thank God for those in our day who are speaking out against unjust laws in our land. We should seek to do that. But don't think that you are alone and that everything depends on you. God himself is the one who instituted human government, and when governments are unjust, eventually the living God will move in to destroy that government. I think that is why you have seen government after government after government perish from the earth. And don't forget that the American experiment is very, very young. And if our government continues to go corrupt, God will also move in and destroy our government. But in the meantime, we are to live under governmental authority. And God will often use even the evil things of a corrupt government. He will use them for good in the life of his children. We have to respect civil authority. Now, how do you teach that to children? If that is our goal, how do we teach them to respect civil authority? I want to suggest that the primary way is we teach them to respect civil authority by teaching them to respect parental authority. It must start in the home, teaching them to respect us as parents. Parents have been given the position of authority in the home. Children are not to be running homes. Three-year-olds are not to be in charge in the family. Mothers and fathers are to be in charge. Now, there is a rebellion today in some quarters against the concept of parental authority, and there is good reason for that. The reason, in my opinion, is that we have so many insecure parents in our generation who have used their parental authority to excuse child abuse. And consequently, you have many, many parents, because of their own insecurity, who have the attitude, I'm the parent, and I can do any crazy thing I want to around here, and you're going to do what I say or else. And that's the way they've operated. They've operated as a despot in the family without concern for the children's welfare. And because of their own insecurity, they have been involved in child abuse. And never in the history of this country have we had as much child abuse, physical and emotional, as we have today. And so I think because of that, we have had a rebellion in certain non-Christian circles against the whole concept of parental authority. Now, let me say this. That kind of attitude, a domineering attitude that simply imposes your will on the child without any thought of the child's well-being and operating out of your own insecurities, will never teach a child respect for parental authority. In fact, what it will most likely do is cause them to rebel against parental authority. And when they rebel against parental authority, they will also rebel against civil authority. There are two great pitfalls for parents in teaching respect for parental authority. I want you to hear me carefully. In my opinion, these are the two greatest pitfalls we face, and many parents have fell into one of these. The first pitfall is discipline without love. Discipline without love. Some of us as Christians are strong on discipline, but we're weak on love. We tell them what they're to do, and we press them to make sure they do it, but we're weak on love. And we will never teach parental respect when we are strong on discipline and we're weak on love. You see what happens when that takes place? Love focuses on the needs of the child, and that's where the parents should be focused, on the needs of the child. Discipline without love focuses on the need of the parent. Some of us, because of our own emotional insecurities, feel that we must be in control and we must have the last word, and we come across as a despot to our children, and they have the feeling they don't love me. All they do is, well, make me do what they want for their benefit. Make them look good. And that's the attitude. That's what they feel inside. We're making them, trying to make ourselves look good. And that kind of discipline will never, ever teach child respect for authority. The other pitfall is the opposite end of the continuum. It is leniency without love. Leniency without love. You see, again, love focuses on the need of the child. But when we are lenient with our children without love, it focuses on the need of the parent. And so we have a significant number of parents in our society who have the feeling and the attitude to the children, do what you wish, don't bother me. You see, they're too insecure to face conflict with their children and to work through conflict with their children. It's easier to let the children do what they want to do. And so they're very lenient. They let the children do what they wish to do. That is not love. Now, I read recently of a son who said to his father, I hate you. The father, shocked by that statement, inquired of the son, why do you say that? And here was his answer. Because you never denied me anything that I wanted. Isn't that strange? You never denied me anything that I wanted. You hear what the child is saying? That parent has fallen into the pitfall of leniency without love. I'm telling you, to give a child everything they want, whenever they want it, is not love. It is leniency without love. That is not the way to teach them respect for authority. Now, there needs to be some leniency. There must be leniency. That word leniency means mild. It means soft. It means merciful. Not rigorous, not severe. There needs to be some leniency. We need to have some softness. But always that softness is to be with love. That is, our thought is to be the child's well-being. The child's well-being, not our well-being. We don't let them do what they want to do in order so that we don't have to spend our time. We can do what we want to do by giving them that. No. We give them freedom. We're soft. We're merciful. But it's when we think it is for their benefit to be so. Now listen to me. We will tend to be more merciful to our children. We will tend to learn what leniency is all about if we will listen to our children. Listen to our children. I had a pastor's wife say to me this week, Dr. Chapman, I hate to say this, but my husband never, ever listens to our daughter. He always tells her what to do, but he never has listened to our daughter. All her life, he has never listened. And she said, now they have no relationship. I said, how old is your daughter? She said, 18. And she was asking me, how do I as a mother help my husband and my daughter have a relationship? Well, I'll tell you what I told her. Here was my advice. I said, I'm not sure you can. You shouldn't take that responsibility on your shoulders. I'm not sure you can. But I can give you something you can try. You might suggest to him that perhaps it is time for him to say to his daughter, I realize that I have failed you through the years. I have not been a good father in that I have not listened to you. And consequently, I don't know you very well. And I would like to ask you to forgive me for always having the answers, but never really hearing the questions. I'd like to ask you to forgive me. And if you're willing, I would like to listen and get to know you. I said, maybe, if he would do that, maybe she would open up and forgive him and begin to talk. And maybe they could have a relationship. But I said, I'm not sure you can pull that off. You can share the idea. I'm not sure your husband will respond. You see, it's very difficult to break those patterns of being domineering without listening to our children. Discipline, but no leniency. And the child doesn't feel loved, but they feel like they've been run over every time. They will never respect our authority until they can see that we are people who are concerned about fairness, about justice, about mercy. And how can you be fair as a parent if you don't listen to both sides? However can we be fair if we don't listen to the child's side? And listen to me, the older they get, the more we must listen. Now, when they're 2 and 3 and 4, it's all right. You've got to make the decisions. In fact, you've got to do almost all of it because they'll put their hands on the fire if you don't. I mean, you've got to do almost everything. But the older they get, the more you must learn to listen because they are thinking now. They are feeling now inside. And if you're going to minister to them discipline and leniency and love, you're going to have to know where they're coming from and what's going on inside of them. And so you will have to learn to listen so you can be fair. Look at God. That's what he does. God disciplines us to be sure. Read Hebrews chapter 12 if you doubt that. But God always disciplines us in love. He listens to us. He listens to our pain. He lets us pour out our anger to him. Read the Bible and you'll find his children railing at him because they feel like he's treated them wrongly. And God listens to them and God hears them out. And then God responds to them in a loving way. We have to learn to listen to our children if we're going to teach them respect for parental authority. And then they come to respect civil authority. I thought the illustration Pastor gave this morning from our city was a wonderful illustration of the mother who moved in and broke up that riot before it got started. I don't know if you saw this week. I was up at Fruitland Baptist Bible Institute speaking 2 days this week, and one afternoon I saw Oprah. do y'all watch Oprah Winfrey? Well, I don't either, usually. But I saw her as I was going out for dinner. And they were screaming at each other about the L.A. situation. And there was one lady. You know, Oprah's usually pretty good on controlling that microphone. And she can move around pretty fast. But this lady grabbed her hand. And while she was speaking, she held on to Oprah's hand. And she started telling her story about what had happened. And every time she would make a point, they would all start cheering. And she would say, hold on, hold on, hold on. And she would tell another part of the story. And they would cheer. And she said, hold on, hold on, hold on. And she went through that about 5 times. And she held Oprah's hand, telling the other people to hold on. She wasn't through yet. At the very end, she said one last time, hold on, hold on, hold on. And then she said, I want you to hear me. She said, we have been screaming, where are the policemen? Where are the policemen? And we have been screaming, where are the teachers? Where are the teachers? And she said, what I want to say is, where were we? Where were the parents? Wow. She's asking the right question. Because you see, children will never learn respect for civil authority until they first learn respect for parental authority. Whoo! Second goal. We must teach them to accept responsibility for their own actions. To accept responsibility for their own actions. Verse 11, verse 1. Interesting that Paul said this in the midst of his little brief defense. He said, if, however, I am guilty of doing anything deserving death, I do not refuse to die. Do you hear what he just said? If I have done anything deserving of death, I do not refuse to die. Here is a man, you can study his life before this and after this. Here is a man who accepted responsibility for his own actions. He's willing to accept responsibility for his own actions. If I've broken the law, I'm willing to take my wrath. That was Paul's attitude. Now, this means that we must teach our children how to make decisions, realizing that every decision they make will have results. Every decision they make will have results. You see, Paul made his decision in verses 9, 10, and 11. He made his decision to appeal to Caesar. He reasoned in his mind. You can see it happening if you read behind the scenes. Festus has said in verse 9, are you willing to go to Jerusalem? Now, when Festus says that, Paul reasons in his mind, I think, I'll never get a fair trial into this man. Any man that will waver like that, knowing I should not go to Jerusalem, but trying to talk me into going to Jerusalem, I'll never get a fair trial into this man. And Paul already knew what would happen if he went to Jerusalem. He had the word there. They were out to kill him. He knew what would happen in Jerusalem. And Paul reasoned in his mind, I cannot be tried under Festus. I certainly am not going back to Jerusalem. I appeal to Caesar. And he made his decision. He saw Festus wavering. He perceived what needed to be done. He made his decision, and he never looked back. And Paul is now on his road to Rome. Someone once asked J.C. Penney how he had managed to go so far in the business world. And J.C. Penney said this, one, I pray seriously for wisdom. I pray seriously for wisdom. Secondly, I think as clearly as I can. Thirdly, I make my decision. And fourth, I never look back. I live with the results of my decision. Now, here's a man who had learned how to make decisions and was responsible for his decisions, took the responsibility for them. Now, how do you teach children to make good decisions? By letting them make decisions. There is no other way. You cannot pour it into them. You have to let them make decisions in order to learn how to make good decisions. You have to make a few poor decisions and see that I did this, and look, it didn't turn out very well. That's the way children learn to make decisions, by making decisions. May I suggest you start that very, very young? Give your children some options, but let them make decisions within parameters very, very, very young. Let them decide to put up their toys before dinner or after dinner. That's a choice. Let them decide to bring their bicycle in before dinner or after. But you give them parameters, but very, very young, they can learn to make decisions. And as they get older, you let them make more and more decisions. And in the making of those decisions, they learn that whatever I do, whatever decision I make, there's going to be results. So I want to be careful how I make this decision and make sure that I make a wise decision. Now, you see, as adults, there are a few things more important than that. In operating in society, learning to accept responsibility for your actions. But have you not seen it where you work? I mean, the workplace is full of people who are blamers. They pass blame to somebody else. Whatever happens, whatever comes out of their work, You see, they've never learned to say, you know, you're right, I goofed. I'm sorry, I goofed. They've never learned to accept responsibility. They pass the blame onto somebody else. We have to let our children learn to make decisions so that they can come to accept responsibility. This is what God does. God doesn't tell you every little thing about life and make you do everything right. God doesn't do that. God gives us the important truths to live by. And then he lets us make decisions within those parameters. For example, just to illustrate, he says, for example, your body is the temple of the Holy Spirit. Now you take care of it. But he doesn't tell you what to eat for breakfast. He doesn't tell you lay off the sausage. He doesn't tell you stick with the oat bran. He doesn't tell you. He gives you the basic principle. Your body is the temple of the Holy Spirit. Now you take care of it. Now, I'm going to tell you, if you eat sausage every day, get ready to die early, because you will. It's just that simple. We are responsible for making decisions. But he gives us latitude within the framework. He gives us the principles. Then he lets us make decisions. And we learn as we go along. Some of us learn very slowly, but we learn as we go along. You use your mind, you make decisions, and whatever you decide, there will be results that will come from that. We teach our children to come to accept responsibility for their actions by letting them make decisions in the home.
Three Goals for Parents. That was Gary Chapman. More next time here on BBN. You've been listening to Building Blocks for the Family from the Bible Broadcasting Network, helping you build a strong family to the glory of God.
That concludes the online feature. By the way, BBN is on social media. Connect with us on Facebook and Twitter.